kick centre bounce and a ruckman crash on him.
When you get smashed in centre bounce, it just puts you on the back foot.
Crawley, Jordy McKenzie, all on the wing. McDonald runs with the football. Tyson takes it. Campbell the body.
They're moving the ball as well as any. When you get time and space and their willingness to really go fast.
They are so pure, so beautiful to watch with the footy.
On Halftime, Pure Footy.
Great to have the boys with us on Pure Footy. Glenn Laugh from Champion Data for the AFL Prospectus 2015 Gold Embossed Edition, The Reluctant Heroes Bank. Hello, Luffy.
Daniel, how are you?
Very well, thank you. And David King, the world's greatest footy analyst for berriesonline.com.au and 1300 4 tradie. JPC Carpentry Rebuild in the North, one bagola at a time. Is the number up yet?
It's up now. It's right. Up. Get onto it.
Get onto 1300 4 tradie.
Yeah, that's makes pretty sense. Simple, isn't it?
It's a great number.
It's a great number.
And it's active, especially which is even better.
Especially if it rings. yeah, look, we had some teething issues there. Yeah, our friends from Telstra Phone Words took a little while. Good afternoon, Scalzi. Just a little while to get it sorted. But
Scalzi done anything for us lately?
Oh, please.
Has he?
He's
he
put a young fella listeners on the map.
What's he done for half-time?
I'll give him a call after the show. See what he can do for you.
1300 half-time.
Hey, what a great week of footy it was.
Oh. Brilliant.
It was great, wasn't it?
Brilliant.
I mean, a lot of talking points, Glenn. I know you've just been jumping to get in here this week. Your preparation's been fantastic. You're looking forward to getting into your one-on-one stuff.
Yes.
I really enjoy when he does this.
Well, he goes into detail, doesn't he? Narrows the focus. He puts the blinkers on at work at the desk there at Champion Data when they're not partying, those crazy cats. When they're not partying, he's able to get the blinkers on and just really narrow the focus. He's gone deep into one-on-ones today.
Can we talk about the Champion Data working environment one day? Just
what do you want to know?
Crazy.
What? Oh, they're mad.
Loose, wouldn't it?
We are crazy.
Be loose, you numbers guys.
Friday night drinks, unbelievable.
Friday night cordials.
Oh, cordials, that lemonade is awesome. Hey, can we talk firstly, I know we're going to get to one-on-ones, but I think this discussion probably leads into it, gentlemen. Mm. And you were skirting this last night. Well, not skirting. No, you hit it actually last night with Bomber on 360 about Jake Carlisle. We've seen the back page today with the Buzzers article regards to Jake Carlisle and the opportunity that maybe the Bulldogs might have. Who needs him? Not because we don't want him, but who needs him, Jake Carlisle? And what's he worth? Is he that good? Because there's massive hype around him from last year. About 2 years ago, wasn't it? When he was a swing player. And then last year we had the Bomber situation where we played him forward and he seemed reluctant to be there, a bit like you as a hero. And then now we're sort of trying to assess where Jake Carlisle fits in the scheme of things. Where does he fit?
Well, he's clearly not a forward, is he? Like, he had that big game, I think it was against the Pies last year, and he had a big game against the Dogs. But as a forward, I find him a bit of a tease where he will produce a great game. But from 9 games this year, he's only kicked 11 goals, so not a great return.
Right.
And of the top 50 offensive contest players, so that's they're in a contest where your team is kicking it to you, he's ranked 49th of the top 50 in winning that. So one-on-one, really poor. Only Daniel
which would be
McStay,
a surprise, I think,
49th
to most people
of the top 50.
For contests, offensive contests. So it's a real concern. And Joey Danaher is in the bottom 10 to 15. He had a good game against Brisbane a few weeks ago.
He did.
Where he improved his percentages. But Daniel McStay, he's a 20-year-old kid at Brisbane. He's ranked 50th, but Carlisle as a forward, I just don't think has worked. Now, you go back to his defender days, and he had some games where he was, intercept marks and intercept possessions. But when I looked at his rankings across the year, and he was a swingman, wasn't he, 3 years ago?
Yep.
So the numbers won't tell the true story. What would you pay for him? If you're the Dogs, are you throwing? They talk about 700,000, 600,000 for key defenders. But do you pay him that much? Is it a risk?
Can the Dogs afford him?
That's another question.
Well, I don't know. They're leveraged up forward at this stage.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I had a look at Carlisle's numbers, and that patch of last year was pretty big, though. I mean, there's not many players that are capable of kicking 8 goals in a game. In a nutshell, you can say what you like about one-on-one returns. How many players right now in the system are capable of kicking 8 goals or would have that on their CV?
Wouldn't you rather 3 on a consistent basis?
Yeah.
I worry about whether he's consistent enough as a forward. I clearly believe he's not a forward. Defender, I think he has the potential to be an All-Australian defender.
But have you seen that?
Exactly. I said potential.
Yeah.
And so he's now, what, 23, 24. I mean, last week, I know he's rucking against Joel Selwood at times, but he's 200 centimetres. He had 9 hit-outs to advantage out of 13 hit-outs in the second half. Maybe they just got to free him up and throw him into the ruck because they're getting nothing out of Bell Chambers. So he's taller than what I thought, Kingy. I was surprised when I checked that today.
Two ways of looking at this. When he scores, when he's kicking goals, they win. When he doesn't hit the scoreboard, they're getting beat. It's as simple as that. And you look
is
at
it that clear cut, is it?
You look at this year, they lose to Sydney, he doesn't score. They beat Hawthorn, he kicks 2 goals. They beat Carlton, he kicks 1. They lose to Collingwood, he doesn't score. They kick 4 against St Kilda in a win, don't score against Fremantle, kick 3 against Brisbane in a win. Kick 1 against Richmond in a loss and don't score against the Cats.
So the only time he scored and they've lost is Richmond.
Yeah, which was really a pretty close game late, even though you thought Richmond were comfortable most of the night. The scoreboard really didn't tell the right story. But if he had lit up for 5 minutes, anything could have happened. And that the entries in the last quarter really didn't give them a chance. They went short and shallow inside the forward 50 without really threatening the goal face. And that's where Carlisle's strong. That's where he can draw a free kick, if not mark the ball. So I just think these players are too hard to find. It was interesting last night on 360, spoke to Bomber, and I said, what is he? What sort of player is he? And he said he's a good player. And I always worry when coaches say they're a good player. They're not. He's not, this guy can break a game in half, or this guy's a great player. This guy's going to be a star.
It's better than nice player, though, isn't it? You don't want him to be a nice player.
But you don't want to be a good player.
They don't want to be a good player either when the coach is talking.
When your career's finished, you want to be known as a good player. But when you're sort of his age, how old is he?
24.
Ready to make your mark. I think you want to be a game breaker. He can do anything, this guy.
Can I throw this up? Hurley, Hooker, Joey Danaher.
Yep.
They're three potentially quality tools. Hurley's coming along. We know Hooker can play, and Joe Danaher will be a star in the future. So they've got tools. It's not like if he leaves, they're going to be short of tools. If you throw him up now at his peak ages or when he's about to hit his peak, you get a round one for him. Surely, if the Dogs can afford him.
Round one this year, by all reports, is not really a round one per se. It's a bit lower than that. Poor draft this year. Is that fair to say?
I'm not sure.
What's Hoyne saying about that? Hoyne be all over this.
We'll get Hoyne in next week.
It really shocked
after
me.
After he gets over his engagement.
Last time I saw him.
Did he? Yeah.
Beg your pardon.
Hoyne. Yeah, well done. Well done, young man.
See, that's a problem. I mean, champion data. What's the strike rate in there?
Hey, we're running at 100%.
Do numbers on that?
100%.
Right, well, that's good news.
Back to that point. I mean, if, say, the Dogs finish 10th, you get a pick 8 or something like that.
Yeah.
I would say the Bombers would be happy to get another round one pick because surely they'd be looking at their list and all the 30-year-olds, it's not working. There'd be an element of, we got to look to the future. We've got to get some good talent into the system.
They can't do that. I don't think they can do that.
Do the Saints want him?
I don't think they can keep James Hurd as coach and say, we've got to now go back to the draft and look to the future.
So you reckon they can still win a flag with this list?
I would be staggered if at the end of this year, Essendon said, we are in some sort of reprogramming, reinvigorating of the list, just short of a rebuild, with James Hurd at the helm.
But don't you say you need to know where you're at?
Yes, and it's a brave decision, Glenn, to say that we're rebuilding. This hasn't worked. What we've done the last 2 to 3 years hasn't worked. We're starting again. And all the turmoil they've had over the last 18 months,
it's extenuating circumstances of recent years.
That would be a huge call. I don't think that they'll make that. I actually don't think that they'll make that as a club. And you can say that they're in denial or where that leaves them going forward is another discussion, but I just don't think with James Hurd at the helm that they'll make that decision.
So they need more depth in the midfield. It's great having this spine. We've spoken about this spine for about 3 years now, but it's clearly not working.
Yep.
They need midfielders. They need a bit of speed in the midfield. If anyone can afford to let go at all, like Carlisle, it's them.
He didn't have much of a pre-season, Carlisle.
No, I get that.
And I just always it's hard to have a good year. You can have good quarters and good games, good patches, but you can't have a great year after a poor preseason. You just can't have a great year, and I keep coming back to that. He'll probably play ruck on the weekend. He'll probably run around at Domain Stadium over there. Free him up. He may be like a Paddy Ryder. He may actually enjoy just roaming the ground. Like Cam Mooney used to play that roaming ruckman sort of style and play it really well. And then go forward after getting a dozen possessions just roaming around the ground. You feel in the game. You feel like you can actually draw the footy. And I think that's his role. I don't think sticking him in a goal square or a centre half forward's suiting him at the moment.
You got some position benchmarking from Champion Data. You've been able to organise some of that. Then disposals, he's below average.
This is as a key forward,
he's below average. Kicking is average. 450 marks are average. 450 ground balls gets a below average.
Ground balls.
One on ones, poor.
What are you doing, Ross Watch?
Ross Watch later on after a loss too. Ross Watch. Goals below average. Accuracy below average. So when you put that package together, it's not overly enticing at this stage. No. But there is potential. As a forward, remember, if we chuck him down to the back where we all think he could be a real big presence in a game, from what we've seen.
Settled down back, I think he will be a very, very good defender.
Who's going better, Kurt Tippett or Jake Carlisle?
Ooh, that's a good
Tippett.
Good question. Is he? Is he really?
You just threw that out there, Glenn. You did no research then. No research.
Not just a suburb, mate. Yeah. It's not just a suburb research. We need to do some work on that.
I think Horny had an engagement on the weekend and your research really dropped off because you went to the party, didn't you?
49th in the top 50 one-on-one contest players is Jake Culler. We've got the list of those players, the other 49 in the 50. We'll go through some of those top offensive players one-on-one and also defenders as well. We'll do that. After the break. We're going to chat to Greg Boxall as well. We know a fair bit of on halftime. He's our Premier Cricket correspondent with Hoggy, but he's also a recruiter.
Is he coming in?
No, he's not coming. He's on the blower. I just thought we'd just get a bit of a story from Bocker about the great Chris Judd, who, of course, retired on, was it Monday? Tuesday. Monday.
What I just want to know what the question marks on those three were, Ball, Judd and Hodge.
24 past 12 on a Thursday afternoon. Pure Footy with Kingy and Luffy until 1 o'clock every Thursday. Luffy, before we get to Greg Boxall, or Bocker, as we like to call him here on halftime, just those one-on-one numbers. We're talking about that before the break. Let's go through some of those.
So an offensive one-on-one, you'll win 27% of them.
Right.
Nat Fyfe, number one, 55.6%.
That's a lot. That's double.
The next best is Josh Kennedy at West Coast at 46%. Aaron Sandilands, 46%. The interesting thing about him...
There's a number for Ross.
Interesting.
His one-on-one percentage winning has always been very high, but it's a bit higher this year. But it's the amount of contests that he's been in. The last couple of years, it's been around 22, 23 for the whole season. He's already had 26 this year, so they've been able to isolate him a bit more, which is one to look out for.
He dropped a couple last week.
I know, we were looking at that, weren't we, King, during the game. Charlie Dixon, 44%, and Jake Stringer, 43%. So they're the top five.
What would
five.
Charlie be sober? How many?
That's harsh. Just settle the nerves.
He's another interesting talking point, whether you how much you
44%. That's a lot. That's
good
pretty
player.
Good.
He's a really good player. He just seems to be injured all the time. And the bottom five are Daniel McStay. He's only a kid. He's at 8%. Carlisle, 12%. Cremieri, 12.5%. Walters, 15%. Yeah. And Tom Lynch, involved in a lot of contests, but Tommy's only won 17%.
That's
so
a big drop-off,
five.
Isn't it, for Tom?
Yeah, it is a bit of a drop-off.
He was pretty good 18 months ago.
Last year, he was involved in the most one-on-ones. A bit of a drop-off. So it is interesting. They're sort of numbers where the teams can look at, okay, who can we isolate? Who can we get in that position? I mean, we know Dusty Martin's numbers were through the roof last
year. What about defensively, Luff? You got any defensive numbers there?
Well, you look at the lose percentage. So you want a low percentage there. Jared Rivers, 22 contests, he's only lost one. Johannesson for the Bulldogs.
So he's the best,
second.
Is he? Is he the best, Rivers? So there's a lot of talk about Jared Rivers and his career at the end of this year. If that held true, you would think that he's got some high-level football to play going forward.
So. I mean, he's fairly attractive to keep on your list,
absolutely.
I would think, if he's performing like that.
Yeah, Johannesson, the Bulldogs, that's an interesting one. Grundy, Rory Thompson, and Bagley from Essendon. So
Grundy's another one who comes under quite a bit of scrutiny for those that don't know the numbers. So where's he, Luffy? Is he fourth best?
Fourth best.
That's a surprise. So his numbers are better than Ted Richards.
Yep.
What would Ted sit in
the Teddy is high. He's ranked seventh.
Okay.
And Homps from Port Adelaide is sixth, so he's having a good year. And the five that you don't want isolated, Simon White from Carlton, Taliaferro, Clark from Brisbane, Kyle Cheney and Rampy. So
Right.
Interesting numbers.
Dane got stuck on Nate Fife, or Nat Fife, about four times in that game.
That'd ruin the numbers.
That didn't go well.
Tell you what did go well. Greg Boxall's recruiting career with the Mighty Hawks, and still going strong to this very, very day. But he's involved in the 2001 Super Draft. He had an eye on some very young talent, some prodigiously talented young talent that year. And he's going to tell us a little bit about those boys, Hodge, Ball and Judd. G'day, Bocker.
Good afternoon, Harp. Yes, it was a big one, the Super Draft.
It was the Super Draft. Tell us on those three. Now, you were heavily involved. You're the main man there making all the decisions at Hawthorn that year.
John Turnbull. Yeah, go on.
Wow, that was you. Let's not beat around the bush here, Bock. It was you. JT did nothing. The knock on the three players, if there was to be knocks on those three players, what were the slows on them from a recruiting point of view?
Well, the knock on Judd was his... slight knock on his kicking, then his shoulders. I remember the game down the Carnival game in at Geelong, and he fell over. Pretty innocuous fall, and the shoulder popped, and we thought, hello, there's a bit of trouble here in the future, and I reckon his back was going to play up, his hammies, and it took about 14 years for them to come true, though. So it makes you wonder, doesn't it? They tell you different things. I said similar things about Joel Selwood a couple of years back. He's had bone on bone.
That's true.
He's been a superstar, too.
It's true. What about Hodge and Ball? What were the knocks on them?
Well, Hodge, he was a year younger than the other two boys. That was one. Maybe a country boy. He's a fantastic young bloke. And look, at the end of the day, I'm glad we got him. The Hawks, he's been sensational. Well, the three of them were, really. There was probably a bit of a knock on his... the sort of discipline and attitude, maybe, initially. It took him a while to get into the act culture. About 2005 he arrived, luckily. I was getting a bit worried about him. And the other bloke, Ball, was probably a bit of knock on Luke Ball's pace and maybe lack of kicking depth, which was probably correct to a certain extent, but he was a fantastic player too around the ball. He's a premiership player.
Can you remember, Greg, some of the breakout games or the big games they had as an under 18? Can you recall just Luke Ball just tearing a game apart, a Carnival game or a Championship game, or Hodgie or even Chris?
Well, the one with Judd, I was up at Danning on Watson, he played for Sandringham Dragons, Judd, playing the Stingrays, and he's kicked five, and his last one, he sort of zigzagged through about four or five blokes, did a bit of a shimmy, couple of bounces, goal on the run. I thought, hello, what's going on? This bloke's red hot. Anyway, and the funny story was that the year, it's not that funny at the time, the year after that I was lucky enough to watch his first and only game for East Perth.
Yes.
Over at the Leaderville Oval. And he started off, he kicked one early. I thought, oh, that's nice for a young kid. He's kicked a good goal there. And he kicked another couple. Each one was better than the last. And his fourth in the last quarter was a bit similar. He just, you know, weaved in and out of traffic. A couple of bounces, another one on the run from 40 metres, and I sat there in the grandstand thinking, geez, we might have made a mistake here. And I was a bit, you know, I had to have a committee meeting with myself to sort of get up off the seat. And anyway, with what's happened, as you know, the rest is all history. But it was the only game he ever played for East Perth. And I think Tony McCoy was quoted saying that's the last time you'll see him wearing an East Perth jumper, which was correct.
Now, Hawthorn that year, Bocker, had a big choice to make. You moved heaven and earth. Heaven was Trent Crowe, earth was Luke McFarlane, to get the number one pick in that draft for access to one of those three extremely talented young men. How close was it to being someone other than Luke Hodge?
Well, it was pretty close between Hodgie and Judd, to be honest. And Ball was just, he was in the mix. He was third choice, I reckon, the consensus. But... for some, probably obvious reasons, Hodgie had the good leadership, a lot of leadership, and he was a tough kid and all that. And JT, John Turnbull, did really like him, and so did I, Hodgie, and we had him down a couple of times at the club, and we just thought he was the right sort of the fit for Hawthorn at the time, and he hasn't let us down.
You went Hodge with one, Ladson 16, Elston 20, and Sam Mitchell 36.
That was a good draft.
A good draft. You stuffed a couple up there, though, Greg, didn't you? Let's be honest.
Well, that was only my decisions, I can tell you. That's why I was always the assistant, and you just, it was JT's selection. If they weren't, they're mine. I was with him.
Okay, no responsibility.
It was an amazing draft, though. When you get to the decision-making process, when you all have your collaborative meeting and you come together, What do you talk about? Do you tend to talk more about what they can do, or do you worry about what they can't do? Because we often hear recruiters say, well, the knock on him was this, or this is what he can't do. This is, you know, we're worried about his kicking, we're worried about this. Or do you talk about what they can do?
Well, we try to talk about what they can do. Gary Buchanan is big on that when he was the recruiting manager. But I think you've got to see both sides of the story. It's no good, going in sort of blinded by the lights and that, because they'll be good stuff. You've got to just to weigh it up and get a balance, I reckon. And, so that's the way I think we've always gone about it. I've been there since 1989 and we've gone about it in a similar sort of manner, I reckon. You've got to see both sides of the story.
And, Bocco, what were the question marks on D. Harford?
There were none.
Oh, well, I don't think I'm not sure if I was there. Frankie Davis got half. Pick nine, I reckon he was. Could have been anything, as I've
eight.
Often told him.
Nine. Eight. Don't undersell me, Bocco. Eight.
Sorry, mate. You
busted your leg. You were going to be your top three, weren't you?
Well, I said too much. It was 94 draft. Not important right now, Bocco. It's great to have you on board, going through the memories of that 2001 Super Draft. We'll check in with you soon. Thanks, pal.
Right, mate, just because we got one, I'll finish off with this, you all right?
Yeah.
I reckon Hodge is a gold Mustang. Ball, probably a silver, maybe black Mercedes. And Judd was probably a navy blue Rolls Royce. So there's that for three.
Like the way you end that, Bocco. That's why you're on the big bucks here on halftime. Thank you, pal.
Right, mate. Go on your halftime.
Greg Boxall, recruiting extraordinaire.
What a beauty.
And, of
what
course, our Premier Cricket correspondent during summer.
Just between the three of them, they've played 759 games. Now, I've gone back to 1991 when your mate Marcus Seacamp was picked two.
Marcus Seacamp.
But it's actually not the most games from the top three. In 1994, Jeff White, Rocker and Shannon Grant. 811. But
that's a good draft.
It's five premierships. It's premiership captains. It's Norm Smiths. It's all that stuff. It's just a ridiculous draft. And you go back
to carry a team.
You go back to that draft, and there's 16 players that have played 200.
Yes.
And what about Geelong? Jimmy Bartel, 274. Ablett, 270. Not all with the Cats. James Kelly, 264. And Steve Johnson, 243. So you reckon the Cats...
Pretty important draft for 2001 for the Cats.
You really held back the 94 draft, Daniel. Really held it back when I look at it now.
Why do you say that?
162 games. Couldn't get there, could you?
Body was in shutdown about when I turned 20, I reckon.
The body was shut down.
Bad for business.
Slightly after the coach gave up on you.
That wasn't helpful. 25-1. 20-1 on halftime on a Thursday. Kingy with us for berriesonline.com.au and Champions League Carpentry, 1-300-4 Tradie. And, of course, Glenn Luff, the reluctant hero from Champion Data for the 2015 AFL Prospectus. Got him, boss. It's very, very important. Let's go to check in with Ross Lye, Ross Watch on round 10. Now, yes. Bearing in mind, this was his first loss of the season. Look, we've got to acknowledge your opponent. They were good. They won the ball well. Made us defend. Quite simply, when they went in, they scored. We went in, we didn't. We've averaged 9 goals against, inside 50 for the best part of 3 years. They had 8 in the first quarter. Not ideal for us. Just highlights league teams are good and they get hold of you. We put Hill back, turned it around. More entries, you know, opportunities. Johnson early in the hamstring wasn't ideal. 21 days, probably miss, you know. Look, I thought we went back well. Worked back well into the game. It was difficult. Stood up. There's raw numbers out there, a lot of raw numbers, but we'll deal with quality. Had an opponent that laid down the challenge. We didn't respond. We're working on desire levels. You just get back on the horse, you know. And then it finished like this.
Sandy Lang set another ruck record tonight with 8 outs to advantage this time.
Did he? Terrific. That's good. We'll go up in the record books and we'll go down as losers. No worries. Thank you. Good night.
If he just missed the question, if it didn't come through, it was Sandland's good in the ruck, 7 hit outs to advantage tonight. Did he? Good.
Tell you what.
We'll go down the record books as losers.
Very tight sphincters asking those questions over there, I can assure you.
Well, I think the boys cut that up into two because I think the silence was more like 10 seconds.
It was an awkward pause between that. You're right, though. There was some very tight sphincters in that press room. First loss of the year.
The players are nervous going into the rooms after a loss, but nowhere near as nervous as what the media are going in to make sure they don't get a question wrong.
What about when one of the lines in there, which we didn't talk about during Ross Watch, was that we've got to look at a few players, see what they're up to. What does that mean? What's that code for, Kingy?
It means I'm watching you, and if you don't lift your game in the second half, this is career-threatening right now.
He's just on Sandylands. I know Ross didn't want to acknowledge it because they lost the game, but we'll his form losers. In the ruck at the moment, it is unbelievable. So he's had a record hit-outs to advantage. At centre bounces in the last 4 weeks, he's 29-5 against his opponents. And around the ground, 39-2.
39-2?
It is ridiculous, the service those midfielders
are getting full-toed odds out of them, Clinton?
Oh, they're the best scores from stoppage term in the comp, so yes. Yeah, not last week. They didn't last week. Richmond.
Last week was impressive, though. That was the only thing that kept them in the game, wasn't it? They threatened to nearly win the game late through Sandylands and Fife.
I wonder, did he get coaches' votes?
Yes, he would have. Yes. I had them yesterday.
No, he was outstanding.
Tell me about speed of ball, boys. I keep hearing speed from footy clubs. Now, one thing I always thought about the game, speed of ball is important, not everything, was that speed of ball was going to be the saviour for some teams down the bottom half of the ladder to hit the scoreboard and win more games. But all I keep hearing the last couple of weeks is we were going too quick.
Transition speed.
Speed transition.
When I look at the transition speed as an average, now these figures can be distorted, Glenn. I know we talk about this a lot because these are the entries that go quality. Defensive 50 to inside 50. So there's a lot that fail.
Right.
That aren't qualified in there. So when you look at the raw data, Essendon actually averaged the quickest time. Now, when I watch Essendon play, that doesn't seem to be the case. So these are the ones that actually go coast to coast, if you like. GWS second quickest, Adelaide third, and the Hawks are always up there in all major stats, really. They're fourth best. But Fremantle are actually the third slowest at getting the ball length of the ground. So they're not great at scoring once they get them in, though, Luffy. So I don't think it's a priority to them.
It's a very measured ball movement.
Yeah.
The Dockers, they average the most marks in the competition. And Richmond, in a way, out-Frio'd Frio last week with the way they held onto the ball. And a part of Frio's defence is holding onto the footy, high time in possession. But they're still efficient when they go inside 50 in your overall inside 50 numbers. The interesting thing with Essendon, I think they've gone faster and everyone blames it on their slow ball movement, but their inability to score when they do go fast, and the one-on-one numbers, we said it before, as a whole in offensive one-on-ones, they're the second worst in the comp.
You know, if I was on the coaching panel at Essendon,
yes,
I'd play Joe Watson at full forward. I'd play him there for 50% of game time. On ball, as a clearance midfielder, and then full forward. He is a jet at one-on-ones. And I think the bigger-bodied midfielder going to full forwards become the new black. And it's very hard to stop. It's hard to find a good matchup. When the ball hits the deck, you still feel like you're vulnerable. They're great crummers. They're maybe not the best pressure players, but I'd rather them putting poor pressure on in your forward 50 than in the midfield. So I'd be looking at that. I mean, one-on-one, his numbers have been pretty good over the last couple of years.
Well, we see with this, I'm just thinking out loud here, with this speed of ball transition being...
Speed of ball.
Boarding on an issue, if attack how you defend. Are we going to see some more numbers, probably more forward of the ball these days? We're pressing high, trying to restrict opposition space if they win it. But if we're seeing transition speed being an issue, well, we see a couple of anchors deep in the forward half or forward 50 for a lot of teams, just to give them an out, should they be able to get it, transition quick.
I think it's like the corridor versus boundary. There's no right or wrong. You just got to take the best option, I would have thought. I mean, there'd be bits of play where Freo go fast when it's right, but they just don't go fast for the sake of it, I don't think. So I don't think there's any right or wrong.
No, there isn't. I'll tell you the one thing that jumped off the page on Friday night to me was just Richmond's ability to play total team footy. There's no one individually trying to win the game on their own for Richmond at the expense of what the team are doing.
Yep.
And usually Jack Rewalcott gets a lot of feedback in this area, a lot of criticism for being the main man, having to be the P all the time. Now, I've had a look at Jack's numbers over the last couple of this season as compared to last.
Yes.
His numbers are up. He's getting more football, only a couple more a week, but they're way up the ground. He's pushing right up to centre-half back. He's helping out the defensive outfit. But it's taking the opposition's best defender out of his comfort zone. Now, McFarlane last week was a caravan. He just went. He went everywhere with Jack. He went right up the ground. He wasn't allowed to intercept. He wasn't allowed to organise that back 50. And I think that's a major weapon if you can have your forward who's prepared to do this. But Jack last year won 58% of his possessions inside the forward 50. That's down to 49. But he's still kicking the same goal average as what he has done the last couple of years. I mean, he's equal number one in goals since 2010 with Lance Franklin. Bang on, dead square they are.
Right?
So to be able to take that sort of weaponry out of your forward 50 and use him high up the ground, I think has been a major win for them. Their percentage of scoring once the ball goes inside 50 is actually lifted this year. They're getting multiple goal kickers more often now. Last year they had 12 times, but they had 8 or more. This year in seven of the ten, they've already had 8 or more. And we know that's a success indicator. So I just think what they're doing is working for the group, not necessarily for the individual.